Welcome, everybody. We'll make a start now on today's call. There may be some other people joining us. I've asked the operator if they do join us, they join in silence, but they'll be recorded on the notes of the call. Our agenda today is going to start with one of these areas that had some discussion previously on the list. That's to do with the reveal function or its alternatives. We can then have some brief discussion to do with Section 6.5 and authentication and its practicalities, and get an update from Maria on the staff report. And if there's any time left, we can have a quick review of the edits from last week on the discussions we had then. I'm hoping that if we're successful in a bit of clarity today, then we'll probably have another two calls for the next week and the week after at the same time to finish off our work, and they will be focused really on reviewing the entire report. I'm just checking where we needed to change any text or to make any changes to levels of agreement. So if we can, we'll kick off on item agenda one. This is, you'll find, in section 3.2 of the draft report, version 1.4, the reveal function. Now, the original thinking behind the reveal function was this is revealing the hidden data that would be now to the benefit of natural persons, and there will be circumstances under which reveal might take place, and this is an activity that the OPOC would do following a certain chain of events that we have described previously under the relay function, which could mostly be connected with a failure of the relay function to get a satisfactory response to either concern about alleged fraudulent activity or concern for things like inaccurate who is data. And there had been some discussion on the list as to whether or not that reveal function was necessary, and an alternative to it could simply be direct contact to the registrar by the requester who had some concern in terms of the way that the relay function had operated. In other words, information hadn't come back, and that direct remedies would then be sought via the registrar of the sort currently described in Section 4 under compliance and enforcement. And so today's discussion really is to see if which of those alternatives is best, and to see where there may be circumstances where one or the other is going to be useful in some respect or other. So I'm very happy to take a list for anybody who wish to speak on either side of that debate or make some alternative comments.
This is Fabio Silva from Burberry. I'd like to be in the queue.
Yeah, this is Dan. I'd like to be in the queue.
Fabio Silva, that was Dan Cram. Anybody else want to take in the queue?
Steve Del Bianco.
Steve Del Bianco. Anyone else?
David Maher.
David Maher. Anyone else? That's fine. Let's start off with those four then. Fabio, off you go.
Yes, and first of all, I want to apologize that I came into this rather late. This was my second call. So I apologize if there are certain issues that maybe have already been discussed, and if, you know, at any point, feel free to stop me if it means I need to go back and read something here.
Sure. And to remind us which organization you're with?
I am with Burberry Limited.
Okay, thanks.
Richard Padilla here. Sorry.
This is Fabio again. The issue that we have here at Burberry, particularly because we're doing a lot of anti-counterfeiting work, is that we need to contact information of individuals that own websites, and that information is typically found through Whois. And the way what we have found typically when dealing with, for example, proxies, which I kind of see as now being the OPOC, is that if I contact a proxy, And I provide them with a notice of infringement, and I tell them that one of their customers is offering for sale counterfeit merchandise on its website, and therefore please disclose to me the contact information of that individual. Rather than disclosing the contact information, the proxy will forward my notice of infringement to its customer, and if the customer then goes ahead and takes down the infringing content, the proxy then comes back to me and says, we're no longer obligated to give you. Now, my concern here is that we may see a lot of instances of this, in that if I contact an OPOC and I say I need this information because this particular website is offering for sale counterfeit Burberry merchandise, is there a cure period? In other words, will the OPOC go ahead and relay my message to the registrant, and if the registrant goes ahead and remedies the problem and tells the OPOC, tell Burberry that the problem has already been taken care of, and therefore do not disclose my information, then if that's the case, then Burberry really hasn't gotten anywhere. And of course, I do speak on behalf of Burberry, but these are issues that a lot of the brand owners have. So will there be a fixed obligation for the OPOC to disclose that information even within the next 24 hours, the registrant goes ahead and fixes the problem?
Okay, and so for you, this is exactly the debate as to whether or not that reveal function would take place. And for you, the preference to know who the registrant is as opposed to being able to go directly to the registrar and have the website taken down is what?
The preference to know that information is so that way I can get a demand letter sent out to the registrant and put that registrant on official notice of our demands. And so I can identify them for purposes of possibly a civil suit.
Okay, that's very clear. Thank you. Dan?
Yeah, thank you. The real point I wanted to make here was that we have two duplicated ways of getting to hidden who is data that we're talking about. There's the reveal, and there's also the access. And whether or not a remedy substitutes for reveal is not really the issue here. If you have some sort of verified access that we were talking about in our subgroup B, I see no reason for any kind of involvement of the OPOC at all. That would just seem to slow things down. And if we get the access configuration right, then those who need timely access will be able to get it. They won't have the delay of having to go through a third-party OPOC, and they could get it directly from the registrar in cases where it's authenticated. So I still, ever since I first heard of the reveal function, I never quite heard an argument that suggested to me why we should have that in addition to access. And if we do have a reveal function, we probably don't need to worry about any other form of access. But at the same time, we still need to worry about authentication of requesters of the information, regardless of whether it's reveal or access.
Okay. I mean, for me, Dan, the only difference I see there is potentially one of who the requester's interlocutor is going to be. Under the reveal proposal, you're still involving one of potentially tens of thousands or millions of people who may be appointed as the OPOC, and the debate is staying within the realm of the requester and the registrant and the registrant's agent. In the access discussions, you're immediately going to the registrar for that sort of information, and typically under those circumstances, there's always the implication of bad faith, I think, in some way in our discussions there. And so I just think perhaps the difference is potentially one of scale and scalability.
Yeah, but when we're talking about access, we're talking about sort of a pre-authentication before it gets to the registrar, and by the time it gets to the registrar, it'd probably be highly automated along the lines of a port 43 system. So basically we're talking about, well, how do we verify the legal status of this transaction? And I don't know that by going through OPOC we necessarily clear up the situation in any way. I think we might as well, you know, if that is going to go through the OPOC, then there is going to be a necessity for some sort of formal legal arrangement with the OPOC. And, you know, if we're going to be dealing with formal legal arrangements, that's why we were talking about law enforcement agents and that sort of thing.
Okay.
Philip, this is Steve Metalich. Could I get in the queue at the end, please?
Sure.
And this is David Ferris. I'd like to as well.
Okay. Steve Delbianco.
Thanks, Philip. Really wanted to respond to Dan's question about justifying why we have a reveal responsibility attached to an OPOC. And I wanted to clarify, having been the one who pushed for it early, is that I took my cue from proxy today, where the proxy registrant is the place to go to reveal the true registrant. And that's because the registrar doesn't even know who the true registrant is, because they've put in a proxy's name. So in the case where the registrar doesn't even have the true registrant's information, or it's inaccurate, only the OPOC, who's acting as an agent for the true registrant, would have the information of revealing who they are. And Burberry gave an example that for legal processes, the identity of the true registrant is necessary, not just lay of email.
So Can I respond to that?
Let me finish real quick there. So I believe that in the cases where the registrar doesn't actually know, or it's simply inaccurate, there is a high probability that the OPOC does know the true identity of the owner of the website. Second point I wanted to make is that even where the registrar does have correct information of the registrant hiding behind the OPOC, there are going to be parties who need to contact them who will not be able to qualify, I fear, for some of the access restrictions that we're placing on access to registrar data. So for those individuals, requesting the OPOC to reveal the registrant becomes an alternative means of getting to the data. And if we knew today what our access rules would be, perhaps that diminishes the need for a reveal responsibility. But today we are working on parallel tracks, and I still stand on this point that you really need to have an ability to get to the OPOC, the registrant, in cases where the registrar doesn't even know the true registrant's information.
Okay, well,
Dan, I'll put you back at the end of this, if I may. And David Maher is next on the list.
Well, actually, I'm really echoing what Dan said. Dan, I'll defer to you since you should answer that, if you could.
Okay, there may be multiple points to answer. That's all I'm concerned about. Then Steve Metalich is next on the list.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out there's one other difference between the reveal function and whatever gets worked out regarding access, which we're very far from even having that in focus. And that is that the reveal function is, if you use that, someone who uses that has to be prepared for the likelihood or perhaps the certainty that the requester's identity or information will be revealed to the be revealed turned as well. That might not be the case in the access system. So, for example, in situations where there's an ongoing investigation and there's a high value placed on not disclosing to the registrant that the investigation is going on, you probably wouldn't use the reveal function. You would probably have to use the access function. But for the reasons that have already been stated, they are somewhat distinct, and I think the availability of this reveal based on three criteria that are listed in the draft report is a very important part of the OPOC function.
Okay, Steve, thanks. David Farish, for next.
I wanted to just expound upon a point that Steve DelBianco made. I also agree with what he said and what Steve Metalich has said. But, Dan, you mentioned that there was access provided by the Working Group B, but if we go back to the Working Group B's final report, there was no agreement among the working group members that private parties would have access to who is data. So we've got that big problem, too, over and above the point that Steve both Steve made.
Okay, Duke, and then Dan, back again to you.
All right. Let me respond to Steve first. He had 2 points, one about proxies the registrars not having registrant information when there's a proxy service, but I don't think that maps cleanly onto the OPOC model, at least as we had been started to describe it, because under that kind of situation, the proxy becomes legally the registered name holder and captures all the liabilities of such. So, I don't think that really fits in well with what we're describing as the OPOC right now, because the OPOC is being described in a situation where the registrar does have the registrant's information. Secondly, if there are issues with, not getting access and therefore wanting to have reveal, well, that to me just speaks to the word loophole. And what we ought to do is get the access requirements in place so that everyone can agree on them in one place. And if we can't agree on it, then having a loophole to get around our disagreement doesn't seem to be a consensus position. And speaking to the point about the lack of agreement coming out of the subgroup B, well, we still have some work to do. I think we can find agreement if everyone is exploring this idea in good faith within this working group, but we may not be able to do it with the time frame left to us at this point. We might have to simply report it as unfinished business.
Uh-huh. And Dan, what about the point made on the fact that the requester may not want their identity known, and that anonymity could be a point available to them under the access proposal?
Well, exactly. That would seem to be something in favor of speaking toward going toward the access model rather than the reveal model, because that would protect certain requesters from having their own information revealed to a bad faith actor registrant. So that seems to point even further toward going toward the access model.
Right, so you're speaking in favor of an open access model, are you?
I'm speaking in favor of an access model that covers all possible access to the hidden data and that is appropriately constructed so that the people who need the access have it on a timely basis, and those who don't or shouldn't have standing to have that hidden data should not get access to it.
This is Fabio Silva from Burberry. I just wanted to say that I totally agree with that.
This is David. Can I jump in quickly?
Okay, I'll take a new cue. So that was Fabio De Faris.
David Maher.
Anyone else?
John Nevitt.
John Nevitt. Anyone else? Okay, Fabio, had you finished or more today?
I just wanted to. There was a point that was brought up earlier, and I apologize that I didn't catch the name, but it was regarding investigations, and I'm kicking myself for not having mentioned that earlier, because that is extremely important to us. We often go to websites where we see offers for sale of counterfeit merchandise, and in order to secure additional evidence aside from simply images of sales online, we do, on some occasions, send investigators in to meet with these individuals undercover and attempt to gauge how much of this merchandise these people have, in what quantities they're selling it, whether they're actually describing it as Burberry, things like that. And you really can't do that through a system where the individual who owns the site is basically being told that Burberry is looking for their information. And certainly there should be some measures to make sure that only people with standing should make such requests. And certainly, Burberry would be able to identify what on the site is infringing and has led to, led us to request this information, and that we feel that there is certainly something illegal going on here. Thank you.
David Harris.
I support both the reveal and the access function, but if we were to consider what Dan is saying, we would need to have, at the outset, before we could even consider it, we would need to know which private party seemed to be able to get access, which is something that, as I said, we did not agree upon in Working Group B, and Dan, even in his comments, said that there would be some, I think he said, Dan, there could be some restrictions on who would be able to do it. So we would really need that clarification from this group to determine whether or not there's consensus that all legitimate parties would be able to get access before we could even consider his proposal to do away with Reveal.
I think for clarity, probably it's worth saying that there was certainly discussion and disagreement as to whether or not both law enforcement agencies and private parties needed to be authenticated in some way. And there was no practical suggestion to date as to how either parties could be authenticated. And I think that's where we currently are on access and authentication. So, David Mahart, you're next.
You know, well, I agree that I think I agree with Dan that there's no consensus here, and I see no reason for duplicating functions, Reveal and Access. Clearly, we're not going to have any agreement on that, but we should, I think, recognize there is no consensus. The need is to develop an access system and move on.
Okay, David, and what about the differences other speakers have described in the two functions, the one going via the OPOC, the other going directly to the registrar, one being potentially automatic based on allegations of bad faith, the other being possibly related to some sort of authentication barrier. What's your perspective on those?
Well, I think, it depends on developing an access system, which is what we have yet to do. I think an effective access system will resolve most of these concerns.
Okay.
But the problem is that I start with the fundamental principle that the personal privacy for individual data has to be respected, and we will develop an access system that starts with that fundamental principle and move from there.
Yes, I think that's right, and that is the starting principle. But the problem we're trying to overcome is that of intentional inaccuracy and bad faith criminal activity.
That's right, and that is why it is so difficult to develop the access mechanism, which is where we have to sit down and in a constructive way decide how to do it.
Okay. John Levitt, you're next.
I'll pass.
Okay. John, perhaps I'll ask a question of you as a registrar. One question I'd asked earlier of the group was the differences in terms of scalability of these sort of requests going from a requester to an OPOC, as opposed to having none of that sort of function, the OPOCs and everything going to the registrar. Do you see any issues with that?
Ask that again, because I didn't understand what you were asking.
Okay. At the moment, we're discussing the possibility of a reveal function in terms of the normally restricted data, and that entire mechanism would take place as a dialogue between the requester and the OPOC. The alternative to that is that the OPOC has nothing to do with that at all, and the requester is coming directly to the registrar each time they want that reveal information. And my question is, does that raise any issues of cost or time for registrars?
Sure. If the registrar is not the OPOC, in other words?
Yes.
It's a manual process, and you're looking at least in the current version of the 3.2, you're looking at alleged inaccurate who is data as one of the triggering events.
Yes, for instance. Yeah,
yeah, and let's focus on the word alleged. So anyone could just allege inaccurate data, and then there's a whole ICANN process on how registrars have to deal with alleged inaccurate data.
Michelle, this is Dan.
Uh-huh. Okay, and how does that process work, John? I mean, is it simple and cost effective, or is it costly
it's
and time consuming?
It's a manual, time consuming process that we don't get paid for.
Right. Okay. So I had Dan also wanted to speak again. Who else? Hello, Dan. You're on your own. Off you go.
What we were talking about for the access function in subgroup B was something where all of the uncertainty in the manual stuff was essentially pre-vetted before it got to the registrar. So the point was to remove that cost burden from the registrars, and I think it's still possible to create a situation, a system that accomplishes that. So I don't think the cost issue should be a major concern here.
Yes, I mean, what you're describing, I think, is what we've currently got in the report is 6.3, regular access to numerous data records that are undisplayed, as opposed to 6.2, which is one-time access to a specific full data record that is undisplayed.
Well, it depends. There are various forms of access that would apply to different requesters of different standing, but the point is that all that stuff is worked out before it gets to the registrar and it becomes essentially an automated process. The registrar just build a system to deliver it to the right port.
Okay, John, any comment on that? Does that sound feasible?
No comment.
Okay. Anybody else want to talk on this topic?
So,
okay.
This is Steve. Could I get in your queue?
Yep, absolutely. Steve, anyone else? Nope, Steve, I forget.
Yeah, just to say that there seems to be a fair amount of agreement that if the access system were constructed right, it would address many, not all, of the interests that are addressed by the reveal function. But I just think we have to face, kind of take a snapshot of where we are, and we are so far from having agreement on the access function that I would hope that there could be some flexibility on the reveal function.
Uh-huh.
Well, let me just respond to that. On the reveal, the problem with the reveal function is that it's also actually not very well specified at this point, and if we go into detail, we're going to end up with precisely the same standing issues that we're dealing with in terms of access. And if we don't deal with them, then all we've got is pretty much a clear loophole that undermines the whole purpose of having an OPOC in the first place. So if we're just going to have a clear reveal function, on demand, then why have an OPOC in the first place?
Okay, to me that's also an interesting question, because I think if we're saying we're going to do it all via direct access to the registrar, there's going to be no reveal function, there's going to be no... there's not going to be much of a remedy function as currently drafted. It does start to beg the question, what on earth is the OPOC all about?
Well, I don't know that there wouldn't be a remedy function. I mean, the point of the OPOC is, as I see it, is...
Well, no, a remedy function, by remedy we mean a function that the OPOC would be the actor for, not the registrar.
Well, that could be determined for that to be the case in certain circumstances, I would think. I mean, going through the OPOC to the registrant, and I'm not sure whether registrant takes technical responsibility or the OPOC could do that as well, depending on the contract. There are minor remedies that are, available if they choose to act on the information that comes to the OPOC and is relayed. And if somehow that process is breaking down, then there's the Damoclean sword of taking the domain off the DNS, and that is always available. But, I think that the more constrained remedies are still made possible by having the OPOC. But if there is a need to actually get access to the hidden data, then it should go through the access system such as we constructed.
Okay, I think that's clear. Well, if I can sum up, I think, where we are on this point, I think there is some agreement that if the access proposals could be simple, cost-effective, and rapid, then they may fulfill most, but not all of the functions we're currently talking about under reveal, and that was perhaps the biggest. There are, however, certain functions that reveal give, such as ability to find out who the registrant is, for things like need to serve notice on those who are engaged in criminal activity. And there's also the potential cost issue of a manual process as opposed to an automated one if this entire issue is, entire burden is shifted to the registrar responsibility as opposed to the responsibility of an agent of the registrant, the OPOC. So I will try to...
Just one more comment, Philip, I'm sorry.
Those views in the next version. Is that down again?
Yeah, I don't understand quite why the OPOC is not sufficient for serving notice, because if the OPOC has a binding contract with the registrant and the ICANN's policy can be shaped to require that, then the OPOC could essentially act as a legal representative of the registrant.
Okay, I think there were two conditionals in your sentence there, weren't there? You're saying if the OPOC has a binding contract, if ICANN can help to enforce that. And I think neither of those proposals are currently in our report.
Okay.
So let's leave that then where we are for the moment and talk about the associated topic of authentication. Maria, where are we with staff report? Maria, are you there?
Oh, sorry, yes, I was coming off my silent mode. Excuse me. Okay, so you had asked for an update on the consulting work that we have commissioned from a US-based consultant with a security and law enforcement background. It was basically we engaged a consultant to provide us with information on existing organizations in the US that are potentially capable and interested in providing accreditation or certification services to law enforcement agencies for accessing WHOIS data. First of all, we asked for that for an analysis of that on a national basis in the US. I've got some preliminary, basically a draft that I've just got to do some light reviewing on to make sure it's formatted correctly. So I'll just give you a verbal update of what we heard from the consultant. His view is that it's not, it doesn't appear to be feasible for, or he's not confident that there's an organization that can properly accredit law enforcement agencies in the US alone, let alone internationally. He has set some criteria for actually how accreditation might work, at least in a generic sense. And then he looked at the number of law enforcement agencies there are in the US, found it's close to about 20,000 organizations. That's looking at everything really from, from town-based law enforcement all the way up to the state level. He then applied the criteria of how might accreditation work to a roundup he did of various organizations that are in the field of either recognizing law enforcement agencies or particularly in sharing information. So he's basically gone through various of those and compiled information about them. And the broad findings are that he doesn't believe that accreditation at the moment is going to be certainly very easy to do. So I guess I can leave it at that, but I think I should have this report out to the group by tomorrow.
Okay, that'd be interesting to see the full report. So the short take is, and this is only related to law enforcement and only related to one country, the US, and that even in the national confines and even just related to law enforcement, let alone the private sector or other countries, he sees problems.
Yeah, that's a very succinct analysis, yeah.
Okay, interesting. Which is broadly, I think, where we ended up as a group and is currently reflected in line now 476 in section 6.5. 6.5 is entitled, Do Those Needing Access Require Authentication? And currently the port is saying that there was discussion about broadly two mechanisms and means of access, either a form of self-declaration by the accessor, that person demanding access, and that could potentially be backed up by a challenge pursued by the registrar, or the second, a means of authentication of the accessor by a third party. I think in previous discussions, it had been agreed that use of Interpol to authenticate LEAs was not a starter, and use of LEAs to authenticate the private sector was also rejected. And so far, the report is saying there was no practical suggestion about how authentication may take place in a way that is scalable globally and proportionate to cost. We've just heard a synopsis of the a consultant's report looking at one specific of that, which seems to say the same thing. And where we are now is further discussion of the group about authentication as being the preferred mechanism. So I'd be very happy to hear from anybody who has some very smart suggestions. I'll take a cue now.
This is Dan.
We have Dan. Anyone else? No, Dan, you're on your own.
Well, I'm sorry that Pat Kane is not on the call today because he made a very interesting presentation in San Juan, and he suggested that the anti-phishing working group was actually working on an interesting method of potential authentication that might operate essentially on a private basis, but I would assume with some legal authority. So,
and that was authentication of LEAs or private sector or both?
I think possibly both. He didn't specify in detail at that particular presentation, so I don't have any more detail than that. But I would be interested to hear from him or the anti-phishing working group generally as to what they're coming up with along those lines.
Okay. Well, I mean, if there was a specific practical suggestion, then I think I would urge you, Dan, to contact Pat and ask him to write that down in simple words and post it to the group, because we'd all be very happy to know about the practicality of the system. So far we've talked about a theoretical mechanism, but we are struggling to look at the practicality, so any suggestions in that direction will be most welcome.
Right. And also, I'm interested in hearing the report that Maria will deliver to us tomorrow, because until I understand how this consultant construed the criteria of authentication in the first place, it's hard for me to evaluate that result.
Sure. And I think I would encourage everybody to make comment on the list about their report once you see it, so we can have that debate over the week going forward. Anybody else want to say anything on this topic? Okay, Doug. Well, let me just talk briefly then about work plan going forward. I think probably we may need another couple of calls at least to finish our work. And what will be useful, I think, at this stage is to go through the report. We'll issue a 1.5 following on today's discussions. And we will then take that in chunks to assess where we have levels of agreement or disagreement and see if there's a need to change particular recommendations from saying agreed to support or even to alternative view, so that then the degrees of consensus on the report are clear. And I'll post an email, having spoken with Maria, about the practical mechanisms of doing that with a reasonably lengthy report, sort of a number of suggestions, although I think probably we have been moving slowly to phrasing that is more or less accepted by many people, and we just need to validate that over the next couple of weeks. So that's certainly the idea of the process going forward. I'm happy to take any questions on that. Splendid. Well, then, in record time, I propose we bring this call to a close, which will be a great sigh of relief to many people on this call, I think, who are aware there are other ICANN-related policy calls happening today shortly. So it gives us some time to spend a little longer in our day jobs. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thanks so much.
Contact next week.